Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room. With the wood paneling, lava lamps, and the tabletop hockey. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate. And your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. And tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. Today's my birthday, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I'll give you some clues. The year I was born, the Beatles held the top five positions in the Billboard Top 40 singles in America. Elizabeth Taylor married Richard Burton for the first time. And a gallon of gas, 30 cents. My birthday actually began on a bit of a downer. My YouTube channel was demonetized. That's what happens when you have the wrong opinions, I guess. But the rest of the day turned out quite nicely. I watched my one son play hockey, watched my other son play tennis, came home to the fabulous, mighty Aphrodite who made me a wonderful birthday dinner. The chocolate cheesecake was a little over the top, so I took the stairs to the studio tonight. I did receive birthday wishes on Facebook from a lot of people, including Explore Brad Olson, who was on this program with me just before Christmas. And at that time, Brad was in Terra del Fuego at the tip of South America awaiting a ship to take him across the Drake Passage to Antarctica, where he's hoping to get an area he calls Illuminati Disneyland. This is the supposed location where a UFO some 3 miles in length is emerging from the melting ice. Now, Brad tells me he has secured a spot on a 78-foot former racing sailboat outfitted for expeditions, and he's expected to arrive at Palmer Base in the Antarctic, and then hopefully inland to the anomalies on January 16th. And he promises I'll be the first to know how it goes when he gets back on February 10th. Godspeed, Brad. Birthdays, especially ones that fall in the mid-double digits, are always a good time to reflect on one's own mortality. But what if aging and death were optional? The startling truth staring us in the face is that we might just be able to live forever, or at least another 1,000 years. Would you want to? Sooner rather than later, this may be a question you'll need to answer, truly, because it will be an option for you and everyone else, in particular if you're a millennial, 40 years or younger. Then you'll have a good chance of staying young and healthy forever. Experts and futurists call it longevity science. What once was science fiction now looks more like our near future. So if you'd like to live forever, or at least another 1,000 years, what can you do to increase the odds? And what latest scientific breakthroughs may ensure that at some point, lighting the candles on your birthday cake will turn into a 5-alarm fire? Bill Falloon, the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life, joins me in the first half of Coast to Coast AM to tell us where we can find the fountain of youth, the wellspring of immortality. In hours 3 and 4, Andrew Collins, the co-discoverer of a massive cave complex beneath the Giza Plateau, now known as Collins Caves, is back on Coast to Coast to present a new astronomical paradigm that shines light on the primal awakening of human consciousness, sparked by the discovery of precession cycles, sound acoustics, and number cosmology. From Göbekli Tepe to the pyramids of Egypt and the archaic myths of Greece, tonight, this morning on Coast, Colin leads us to humanity's ultimate psycho-spiritual roots in the Paleolithic world of Russian Siberia and the realm of the Denisovans. Don't know about you, but a late evening talking about how to achieve immortality, sprinkle in a little Göbekli Tepe, the legendary giants of Siberia, to me that sounds like a recipe that could almost rival my birthday dinner. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you're among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate in-depth radio News Talk 1010. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Bill Falloon lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and is director and co-founder of the Life Extension Foundation, a consumer advocacy organization that funds research and disseminates information to consumers about optimal health. Bill has made hundreds of media appearances, including guest spots on The Phil Donahue Show, Tony Brown's Journal, and ABC News Day One, and has been interviewed on Newsweek and other by Newsweek and other magazines. He's also a founder of the Church of Perpetual Life. Bill Falloon, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And the incredible news is, as you start having more birthdays, instead of your body deteriorating, which it does as we normally age, science is advancing to the point where we're on the verge of a biomedical renaissance, where older people are going to be made somewhat younger or very younger, depending on how fast we can accelerate our research.
Now, the idea that there may not be any sort of obstacles to extending life almost, or extending the natural limit for the human lifespan, I mean, doesn't this fly in the face of just anecdotal evidence? I mean, the oldest living person, I believe, on record is 127.
And 123, I believe, is the oldest person. They were super centenarians. Some of the research we're doing in conjunction with Harvard researchers is identifying the genomic structure of super centenarians, very unusual people. They remain very healthy until over age 100, and they're very rare. But if we can emulate the genetic profile of a super centenarian, we'll be able to make virtually everybody live in good health for over 100 years of age. But that's just the beginning. We will then use that extended lifespan to accelerate the science even further, so we can edit our genes using CRISPR-Cas9 technology to literally enable old people to grow biologically younger.
Let's just talk a little bit first, if we could, Bill, about the Church of Perpetual Life. What is it? What are the tenets of your faith?
Well, the faith essentially is in mankind, that we were put here by someone, we have no idea who, but the evidence indicates we were put here to accelerate technologies that will facilitate the transformation of life into a future era of abundant immortality. And you look at all of the incredible scientific breakthroughs that have occurred over the last 200 years. I mean, it's been a scientific renaissance, but that applies also to medicine. We die differently today than we did in the early 1900s. We've eradicated most bacteria through antibiotics, but that took way too long to get out of the laboratory into patients in need. And we're in the same predicament right now. There are ways to at least partially reverse some aspects of aging in older people. We are doing it, by the way, on a consistent basis. And yet, most people are just unaware of this science. But the mainstream media is even picking up on it, as you are, that the science is real. It is being published in respective medical journals.
So, I mean, I don't need to tell you. You're well aware of this. I'm sure you've suffered the slings and arrows. But you are regarded by some as a charlatan, a patent medicine-selling con man. How do you respond to those critics?
Well, the pharma industry does not like the fact that we are delaying aging and thereby delaying their access to a lot of profits. We fight the FDA on many, many fronts. I've written many books exposing FDA corruption, ineptitudes, fraud. I've exposed them in every way imaginable, and the pharmaceutical industry would like me not to be around, because I'm telling people how to live healthier so that they can at least delay their rate of biological aging. And we can validate that in peer-reviewed published studies. One came out last year showing that people who follow the type of healthy lifestyles that we advocate are aging 4 years slower. It's a delayed rate of biological aging, 4 years, which may not sound like much, but we're also reducing disease risk. And we advocate healthy behavioral patterns. And the pharmaceutical industry, they'd like you just to grow old and need lots of their medications so they can make all their profits. So that's what I'm battling.
So how does your sort of school of thought regarding life extension differ from, let's say, Aubrey de Grey and the Methuselah Project?
Well, they're identical in many respects, so the articles differentiate us. Aubrey is doing animal research. He's doing spectacular work. He's got a nonprofit group called SENS, that stands for Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence. It's an incredible attempt that he's making to find a way to make old animals young again. Well, Aubrey's about 10 years younger than me. I'm 64 years of age, and Aubrey is not in a hurry as much as I am, because I've got a lot less time to achieve our ultimate objective, and that is translating the animal research into old humans. And we are doing that with our research. And I don't sell, by the way, the products that we're advocating people use. These are mainly off-label medications that are used for other purposes. These are one of the few prescription drugs that have side benefits as opposed to deadly side effects. We do know the difference, by the way, and we've been battling the FDA for decades over that.
Tell me about parabiosis research.
Yeah, this is what's fascinating. Back in 1972, a publication in the New York Academy of Sciences showed that if you suture an old mouse onto a young mouse, the older mouse grows younger, and it also lives longer. In a human equivalent, it lives 10 to 12 years longer by virtue of that young blood circulating through the older animal. And also, the younger animal, it grows older because it's being exposed to senescent proteins in the body of that older animal. So you see the younger mouse accelerate aging while the older mouse grows younger. Now, that research in 1972, it continued to around 1975, and it fell off a cliff for reasons that we don't even know. But starting in 2012, they picked up on it again. And in study after study, they were able to demonstrate meaningful age reversal by circulating young blood into older rodents. And if it can be done in the animal model, people started to think, what happens if we do it with older people? And we are seeing results, not the identical ones in the animal model, but we're seeing indications that we're making older people grow somewhat younger by virtue of number of surrogate biomarkers that we use to measure aging.
So are we talking about blood transfusions, putting the blood of young people into the bodies of older people?
That's being done right now by people who can afford it. You have to test these young people very carefully. You don't want to have their viruses in your body. But there are people spending money to have a pint of fresh, young plasma normally. You don't really want the cells from young people. That can cause some immune reaction issues. But that plasma has a number of youth-promoting properties. So for people who can afford it, they're doing it as often as they can afford it because they feel younger after they do it. And when we measure some of the parameters, it seems like they're doing better. But that's not our ultimate objective. That's what people are doing right now to reverse aging. It's crude and it's primitive, but it's at least a start.
Also sounds almost like the, I don't know, the inspiration for a Bram Stoker novel. It sounds a little vampiric.
Analogies there, yes. And thank goodness there's a number of young people. It's safe for them. They need money for college, and they typically donate a pint of blood for movie tickets. In this case, they get paid rather well to donate money to an older person to enable that older person to continue to live.
So, I mean, you're 64, you said.
I am.
Are you afraid of dying?
Oh, absolutely. That's the worst event that could ever occur. I'm enjoying my life quite a bit, and the idea that it has to be cut short prematurely because we're not accelerating research fast enough, it's outrageous. And it wasn't until 2014 where we really realized we can make older people grow younger, and if we keep at it, we could theoretically keep them alive indefinitely.
Can I ask you, why are you afraid to die? Let's say you live to a ripe old age of 95, and you have your faculties, you're ambulatory, and you die peacefully in your sleep, and after you've had a full life, what is it that is it the pain of death? Is it the possibility of non-existence? What is it?
It's difficult to describe because so many people have somehow put themselves into a state of denial, and they're not as terrified about their own mortality as they should be. And I understand that. I do understand that. But the idea of me and my followers not being around, that our library of accumulated knowledge is just going to disappear in one split second. It's absolutely terrifying. And I also am able to enjoy every aspect of what I do. If I'm suing the FDA and going to court, I enjoy that. If I'm looking at scientific research, I can read medical research papers all day long. If I'm looking to talk to our group at the Church of Perpetual Life about new ways that they may be able to slow their rate of aging, we do emphasize calorie restriction, intermittent fasting. Most of what we advocate has nothing to do with commercial sale of anything, which is why these accusations that drug companies like to make against our nonprofit group, it is ridiculous. We're out there trying to save lives. They're trying to sell them patented medicines.
Some people in this arena, this field, have a problem with the term immortality. They don't like it. They prefer to talk about life extension. How do you feel about the term immortality?
Well, they don't understand it yet. They don't feel that you can go on indefinitely, that there's some upper limit threshold. However, the journal Nature, 2017, published an article in which a group of highly respected scientists got together, and they said there is no upper limit to how long humans can live. In other words, we understand enough about why we age and why we degenerate. All we have to do now is identify the solutions.
What about I keep hearing about the length of the telomeres and how they are shortened every time cells divide. Isn't that the obstacle, the ultimate obstacle?
It's one obstacle. It's not the entire solution. But if we can identify a way, and we don't have that yet, to lengthen telomeres, we could theoretically enable people to live a very long time. So since we don't know how yet, no one really does. Some pretend to. They're selling expensive products, but there is no validated way to lengthen telomeres. You can reduce your rate of telomere shortening by living healthy, eating healthy foods. Fish oil can help a little bit. Calorie restriction. That can all reduce the amount of shortening. But to actually lengthen your telomeres, we need new technology. So in lieu of that, we're looking at different medications. One of them is called metformin. It's an anti-diabetic drug. It also happens to have anti-aging properties. And most of our followers at the Church of Perpetual Life, they ask their doctor to prescribe them metformin. Whether they're a diabetic or not, the data is compelling as far as it adding healthy years to one's lifespan.
So is the idea that you want to extend your life long enough to the point where some of this technology that's on the horizon will catch up and will arrive in time. You know, you may be 85, 90 by the time it arrives, but you'll be...
That's exactly what our strategy is. Stay alive long enough to benefit from what we believe are inevitable advances in the biomedical sciences, where aging will be viewed as a relic of the past. Just like we look at the smallpox epidemics that used to kill millions of people, well, they don't occur anymore. That disease has been eradicated. And most other diseases, by the way, that used to kill people aren't around anymore. What we're suffering most from is degenerative illnesses caused by us simply living too long.
Let me get back to the Church of Perpetual Life for a moment. I mean, it's sort of non-denominational. You have Christians, you have Jews, you have Buddhists.
Oh, absolutely. We have Thursday night services once a month where we have a respected scientist come in and talk, and then I normally follow up with some updates on our various human age reversal research projects. At any given time, we have several studies going where we're trying drugs like metformin, another drug called dasatinib, a drug called rapamycin, many, many medications that you wouldn't want to take the way the FDA tells you to take them, but if you use them off-label, you may significantly delay your rate of aging. And we get together face-to-face. We meet people, and that's much different than how communications occur nowadays. And I set that church up so that people could get together and exchange information in an open forum so we could figure out quicker how we can live longer.
I don't want to belabor this point, but I am fascinated by the fact, you know, that this Church of Perpetual Life, because, you know, many of your members, one of the principal tenet of their faith is that there is an afterlife and that we sort of should look forward to that. You can't, if you love this life, you'll lose it in the next sort of thing. That's a bit of a paradox.
It doesn't contrast at all. Those who have a belief in an afterlife can retain their belief. We're simply advancing science so people can live longer. If we achieve immortality and you don't want to hang around, there are always options to check out. I don't think I'll ever use those options. I'll probably just stay around indefinitely if I'm able to, but people don't have to.
How does what you're doing differ from the transhumanist movement and the sort of the philosophy of people like Ray Kurzweil?
It doesn't. We're really a transhumanist church. But since the transhumanist technology has yet to emerge to enable people to live forever, we have to deal with biology, which is regrettable. It's not going to be as efficient as the transhumanist supercomputers where we merge into them and literally live forever. So we deal with our biological bodies and we intervene with biologics so that we can prevent disease, delay aging, and reverse it whenever possible. So no real difference. It's just transhumanism is looking at year 2050. Well, I won't be alive at 2050 if something aggressive is not done to intervene into my aging process, and I'm doing that. I'm taking a lot of off-label medications. People see what I'm taking. They think I'm dying of cancer and every disease that's existed. Well, these drugs, if used properly, can have benefits.
All right, Bill, I got to jump in. We'll take a quick time out, come back, and discuss further. The Beastie Boys, you got to fight for your right to party. They are the biggest selling rap band in the world. Check out their new Beastie Boys book, named one of the best books of last year by Rolling Stone magazine. More with Bill Falloon on immortality right here on Coast to Coast AM. Residents in a rural area of southeastern Brazil reported a sky full of, wait for it, spiders this week. That's right, airborne arachnids. Hundreds of eight-legged visitors have taken to the air, constructing a huge web ceiling that makes it look as if they're floating in midair. And according to experts, hot and humid weather causes the arachnids to go airborne to catch their prey of insects and sometimes small birds. Now, mark my words, the producers of Snakes on a Plane will be all over this, coming to a theater near you this summer, airborne arachnids. You heard it here first. And you can check out this story. Check it out on the carousel up at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasor, has posted that story. Back with more of my conversation with Bill Falloon, founder of Church of Perpetual Life, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Bill Falloon, director of the Life Extension Foundation and founder of the Church of Perpetual Life. Bill, give me sort of the laundry list of vitamins, supplements, etc., that you take every day.
Well, I take pretty much everything your listeners have ever heard of. I take pretty much all of them, and then I go way beyond that with different prescription medications, hormone balancing, intermittent fasting, complete calorie restriction, of course, every single day. I don't eat a whole lot of food because food, when consumed in excess, accelerates aging. So pretty much whatever your people have heard about out there, I'm ingesting it if I have time. There's about 100 different supplements, and I don't even get to ingest them every single day, but I try to do my best. Because I'm consuming fewer calories, my need for dietary supplements is reduced.
So, I mean, how many pills a day does that come to? Roughly.
Well, it would come to over 100. I'd like to think I'm taking concentrated versions of them. So many of them on the market, they're really filled with a lot of fillers, and they don't tell you anything different on the label. They'll tell you their multivitamin has, you know, 10 or 50 milligrams of something where you really may need 300 or 400. Most commercial supplements, they are there to make a lot of money, and you see them advertised on national TV. But there are ones, and they're easy to find on Amazon or whatever, that have pure potency. In other words, you get a capsule full of nutrients and not a capsule filled 50% with nutrients and the other half with rice flour. So I take the equivalent of about 100 pills a day. I also do injections of certain medications, hormones topically that I put on the top of my skin for systemic absorption. Certain hormones you shouldn't swallow because they can injure your liver if you were to ingest them every single day. So it's a wide variety of interventions that I personally engage in, and I advocate others to look into the science and figure out what they need. And the first step, by the way, is a comprehensive blood test. When people ask me what they should do, I said, I have no idea until you show me your blood test results. Because some people need certain supplements, drugs, hormones, other people don't.
And in terms of your daily calories, you restrict your caloric intake. What is your caloric intake?
It fluctuates, 1,200, 1,400. If I'm intermittent fasting, I might eat virtually none. But I'm on a very low-calorie regimen, and I've been doing that over the last 20 years on a gradual basis. I've never gone hungry. Not once in 20 years have I gone hungry. I just slowly started cutting out meals that weren't that important to me, cutting down on portion size. And now I weigh pretty much the same as I did when I was 21 years of age. At one point, I had one of those big bellies, and I was unhealthy, and I realized I have to do something. And one of those interventions was eating less.
Does your diet include any animal proteins?
Not as much as it used to. I don't eat red meat. I typically eat fish and wherever I can, vegetable protein. I eat as healthy as is reasonable for my schedule. And I look at what others are eating, and they're eating like 3 to 4 times the number of calories that we advocate, and they're dying sooner. People are literally killing themselves by overeating. So one of the first tenets of our church or our life extension group is we ask people to look at their diet and make some changes there, because that's going to go a long way to enabling them to live longer.
What about exercise?
I do some, not nearly enough. I work 15 to 18 hours a day, trying to identify ways for me to stay alive and sharing that with our followers. So I don't really have the time to do as much exercise as I'd like to, but people who are doing it, I congratulate them, because that in of itself is a way to slow down aging.
And what about your family tree? Do you have heart disease in your family, cancer in your family, or are they long-lived?
I've got heart disease, but what's interesting is I would test my father's blood while he was still alive, and I would identify all kinds of risk factors that caused him to have heart attacks and other vascular issues. And I would look at my blood results, and I'd see the same problems. But what I did is I corrected all those. So I didn't have a heart attack at 53 the way he did. I don't think I have a lot of atherosclerosis the way he did, because I'm eating completely differently. I'm engaged in so many different anti-atherosclerotic type regimens that they didn't even know about back in his day. So we're able to look at blood test results and steer people in a direction where they can reduce their risk of a sudden stroke, heart attack, kidney failure, so many problems that are related to issues that are identified with comprehensive blood testing.
What do you say to some people that might say that you're making your day-to-day life by denying yourself certain foods and things less enjoyable so that you can live longer? In other words, you're sacrificing a quality of life for quantity of life.
You know, at first it was a little of a problem to give up my red meat. I mean, I really could eat it every single day. But when you start to read as many scientific studies as I have showing how dangerous it is as it relates to both cancer, dementia, vascular disorders, it's just not a healthy food to eat a lot of. I got to a point where I couldn't enjoy eating a steak that was going to kill me. I couldn't enjoy that anymore. So it's almost fun and adventurous to be able to go into a restaurant and get a good tasting meal that's also healthy. It's not necessarily easy, but it's a challenge. And almost everyone I associate with, they look at what they can eat that will be satisfactory, but also not hasten their aging rate.
And what about the, you know, that old cautionary tale in science about being a self-experimenter? Because you're sort of using yourself as a guinea pig, aren't you?
Absolutely. Our entire group, this is the group that belongs to our Age Reversal Network. That is our public benefit organization that consists of the most hardcore, let's say, life extension enthusiasts. These are the people who want to live their life in a way that they will live the longest. And these are the people that I interact with. We exchange information, and, you know, we get little report cards. And I'm 64 years of age. I've been out of school a long time. When I get a blood test result back showing that something that I tried to accomplish worked, I feel like, wow, all that effort I made, it scored out well. And I've just reduced my risk of maybe losing my mind as I grow older over the next couple decades. So there's a degree of satisfaction in accomplishing a beneficial health outcome.
What about you mentioned, you know, your mind and you know, the physical health is one thing, but, you know, we're told that if you live long enough, ultimately you will get dementia or you will get Alzheimer's.
Not true. The problem is we got a record number of old people out there, so you have a lot of Alzheimer's cases, but the rate of dementia has been declining since year 1980. There are 4 independent published studies showing that people who follow the healthy behavioral patterns that we advocate, they're not contracting Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, vascular dementia. Those problems that used to afflict nearly everybody, you don't get it if you live a healthy regimen. So, most people are going to develop horrific brain aging problems. But if you follow healthy lifestyle patterns, you are less likely to develop them at an early stage. And by the time you do have any indicators of memory loss, I'd like to think we'll have a way to address that.
Talk to me about the role of stem cells, because that's a favorite subject here on Coast to Coast, particularly, terrific conversations with George Norrie and Christian Wild, researching, the latest developments in stem cell research.
Investigators probably have visited every credible stem cell clinic around the world. We look at their data. We look at what they're doing that might be a little different than another stem cell clinic. And what excites us the most and where we are seeing results with our own independent research that we don't have any financial connection to, and that means a lot, as you know, it's the stem cell exosomes. These are the factors secreted by stem cells in your body that enable your tissues to remain healthy. So we've got some studies going where we're using the exosomes, not the stem cells, but the exosome factors secreted from stem cells. Those are appearing to have a rejuvenating benefit. So we feel the exosomes are a safer way of doing this. If you were to put in a lot of young stem cells into someone's body, they could develop something called graft versus host disease, where those young stem cells invade the bone marrow and set up a whole new immune system that attacks you, the host. So we don't advocate people put stem cells in their body. We do advocate they nourish their existing pool of stem cells with drugs like metformin and with calorie restriction and with a number of other interventions that we have been able to validate can improve the health of your existing stem cell pool.
Let's look to the future and some of the scientific developments on the horizon. And one of the things I've been reading about is the ability to grow organs in a lab. And I'm not sure if this involves stem cells. I would suspect that it would. You know, we read things about, at MIT, they're growing a human ear on the back of a mouse and so forth. How soon do you suspect we will be able to grow our own organs in a lab so that, every 30, 40, 50 years, if you need a new liver, you can grow your own?
It'll be spectacular when that occurs, and it will occur. I don't have data, though, to tell you exactly when. Some of our researchers that we're affiliated with are predicting they'll be able to perfect gene editing within the next 9 to 10 years. As far as growing organs, which is going to be almost essential, because for some people, they just have unhealthy kidneys, and they're going to need to regrow new healthy kidneys and have transplants to keep themselves going. So we love that science. I just don't have any connections to give you any, even an estimate as to when it will be available.
Right. But if you grow your own organs in a lab, no more organ rejection because it would be an exact match. You wouldn't need people to fill out organ donor cards anymore. It's like taking your car in for servicing. You need a new heart, you replace it with your own cells, right?
Absolutely correct. It'll be spectacular. We'd like to think you could also regrow youthful bone marrow so you can maintain immune function as you grow older. If nothing else kills us, by the way, something called immune senescence, where we just lose our ability to fight off common bacteria and cancer cells. The older people, like George and Barbara Bush, they were sick for a number of years, in and out of hospitals. And based on what we understand, their immune system gave out on them. And this happens with people in their late 80s and 90s. Everything else seems to be okay, but they have no more immune function. So, yes, the growing of healthy kidneys and livers and hearts, and then even young bone marrow, so you can start generating your own healthy stem cells. That's where your stem cells primarily come from, your bone marrow. But that gets old, and it stops producing them.
What about environmental issues? Because you can be, restricting your diet. You can be doing everything right on that score, but you can't control, contaminants in drinking water or in the air that you breathe, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously there is a link between the environment and disease. What about that?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's so much out there that we need to figure out ways to make our bodies able to defend against all of those environmental carcinogens. In other words, we need to accelerate the cancer research that we're involved in. We've got a pancreatic cancer study going on right now at the City of Hope Hospital, where we're using some off-label drugs to prolong survival in patients. But the idea is, if we can find cures for the diseases caused by the toxins, then we're really benefiting ourselves significantly. But just some general advice I can give your listeners, and this is hardcore, solid advice: do not eat food cooked at high temperatures. In other words, if it's fried or broiled or grilled, that food becomes an age accelerator. You damage the proteins in your food by grilling it, by frying it, and then that food will damage your proteins in your body. So better to have your food boiled or poached or stewed. Do it in a way that the temperature doesn't go up over 250 degrees, and then that food will cause less environmental damage to you. And, of course, avoid the nitrosamines that are found in cured meats. They're taking them out more and more, but they are carcinogenic. But as you said, there's so many of those environmental toxins out there. You've got to defend your body, make it healthy so it's not as vulnerable to the damage that those toxins inflict.
Who is the oldest member in your congregation at the Church of Perpetual Life?
Oh, I don't know. I don't actually sit there and talk about age. We have some people there that look like they're over 100, but I don't. They probably aren't. The average age, I would say, people 65 to 75. One of the problems is for a lot of people, as they get too old, they start to give up. It's very regrettable because they feel that there may be nothing that can be done for them. And I'm trying to convince people, let's try something, enroll in a clinical study. We fund clinical research, doesn't cost people anything to enroll in, and then we get the data after we administer the therapy, and we're able to identify what works and what doesn't.
Now, is there a point at which, let's say you're 75, 80, 90, and then all of a sudden some of these scientific developments like gene editing and so forth are perfected? Will it be too late? Is there a cutoff age?
That is a fear that a lot of our group has, that there could literally be a cure for aging, but it's only effective up until a certain time. And so basically, let's say we're over 90, everyone else is cured and we just slowly wither away. That is a legitimate concern. We hope it doesn't happen. But some of the technologies may only benefit people at a certain age, and may people too old may not benefit. But we're going to never give up. We never give up on any of our members.
We're approaching a break here at the top of the hour, and what we'll do is we'll open up the phone lines and take questions and comments for Bill Falloon, director, co-founder of the Life Extension Foundation, and also the founder of the Church of Perpetual Life. One of the things I'd like to talk about on the other side, and we could maybe get this conversation started right now briefly, and that is some of the obvious ethical issues surrounding dramatic life extension or even immortality. And you've heard all of these many times, but I would be interested to get your take on. For example, if we have 7 billion souls, 7 plus billion souls on this planet, and a large portion of those are seeking immortality or dramatic life extension, that is going to dramatically, obviously, increase the world's population and so forth. Just very briefly, how do you respond to that? And then we'll pick it up on the other side as well.
The matter is, populations in Germany, Japan, the United States are not reproducing fast enough. We're losing our best people to aging, and the reproductive cycles have been altered quite a bit. There is no population problem. There is no limitation to what we can grow as it relates to food and provide as far as energy. Population explosion is not an issue. As we maintain older people with all that incredible knowledge and not having them drop dead on us, we're going to find solutions to all of these problems.
Excellent point. All right. There are other ethical issues that we will discuss on the other side. And as I say, we will take questions and comments. Now, taking us into the break, a band that met while attending McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, the Arkells, and Saturday Night here on Coast to Coast AM.